RV Family Travel Atlas is sponsored by Jayco. Since 1968, Jayco has been providing a way for generations of families to create lasting memories. For more information, visit your local Jayco dealer or head over to jayco.com.
And by the Thetford Corporation. The industry expert and innovation leader, Thetford has made RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. To see a complete lineup of products, visit Thetford.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we write about RV and family travel with our three boys, Theo, Max, and Wes.
You can read about our adventures at RVFamilyTravelAtlas.com, and you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
On this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas, we are talking about one of the newest publications in the world of RV media. Rova Magazine was launched in the spring of 2017, and we became fans immediately. Beautiful images and well-crafted stories give this magazine an edge on the newsstand.
So we invited editor Gemma Peckham onto the show to chat about creating media for the next generation of RVers. Where did the idea for this magazine come from? How does she track down great content? Tune in to listen to hear a fascinating story about how this project came to life.
You might think print media is a dinosaur in the age of digital content, but we know there is simply no replacement for carrying a great magazine on your next adventure. You are listening to episode 161. Say hello to Rova Magazine.
Before we head into this week's featured topic, Say Hello to Rova Magazine, it's time for our RV News Minute. And this is kind of good news and encouraging news, and we wanted to encourage all of you to take some action.
Absolutely. So we were pleased to see in the news this week that the Florida Keys is actually reopening ahead of schedule to tourism on October 1st. At first, they weren't sure if they were going to be able to reopen until late October, and some events, they weren't sure if they were going to be canceled. But, you know, the Florida Keys, I think, is an iconic RV destination, as so many of the state parks in Florida are. And we have so many listeners down there in Florida. And we've been thinking about you, you know, through this hurricane recovery and everything. And I think when I saw this news, I was like, this is really important to get out there, because one of the best ways that the rest of us can support recovery is by bringing our tourism dollars down there, right?
Yeah, and we often forget after the storm passes and then it's the huge media event is over, it's easy for the rest of us to stop thinking about what's happening in Florida and stop thinking about the recovery. But we know that you guys are living through it there. So if you do want to support Florida, the Florida Keys, maybe think of bringing the RV down there and you know, throwing your tourism dollars to one of those campgrounds. They need it.
Yeah, they said the Key Largo and Key West were the least impacted. So those are really good places to visit right now. They said cell reception is really good, and bridges were able to be fixed and in good operating condition at this point. Also, the airport's open, but what do we know about that? I don't know. I'm not encouraging anybody to fly in. Bring that RV down. So then also some events that they were worried about canceling but don't have to be canceled now is the Humphrey Bogart Film Festival.
Oh, my God. I want to go so badly.
October 18th.
I teach a film class at school. Yeah. We do four Humphrey Bogart movies every year. Casablanca, Key Largo, To Have and Have Not.
Whatever. Do you know what you teach? Think about it. We'll come back.
And Treasure of the Sierra Madre.
There you go. So from October 18th through the 22nd, the Humphrey Bogart Film Festival is going on in Key Largo. And then also the Stone Crab Eating Contest is scheduled for October 21st, and they're going to go ahead with that.
And so I'm sure it's a beautiful time of year to get down there.
Yes. And the same goes for, I think, you know, in Texas, I think the storm-ravaged areas of the coast have really been hit hard. A lot of those campgrounds, if you're, you know, near that Gulf Coast area, keep an eye out on those local campgrounds.
See who's open.
See who's open. And then just when they do open, go pay them a visit. You know, give them your campground dollars.
It might sound crazy, but that loss of revenue for a month can be the profit in a business.
Yeah.
So Stephanie's right.
Yeah. So bring, you know, do good with your tourism dollars and have fun. Is there any better match than that, right?
There is not. Now, Stephanie, I'm really excited about the interview on this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas. We get very intellectual talking to Gemma Peckham from Rova.
I don't know. We just had fun.
I think half
it was
our,
a good conversation.
I think half of our listeners just shut the show
off. Oh, here they go.
But we talked a lot about print culture, print media, and, you know, bringing a magazine into the world in this digital age of ours. But it's such an exciting project, and both of us have just been so impressed with Rova magazine, kind of reading it from cover to cover and really enjoying it. I'm so glad that it was brought forth into the world.
Absolutely. And we definitely wanted to talk about the history of the magazine, and because it's so unusual for magazines to be
its origin
started.
Story.
Yeah.
Like, where did this thing come from?
Right. But who knew that Gemma was going to have such an interesting story of her own? And, you know, like sometimes you just go into an interview thinking, okay, we're going to ask these questions about the magazine. And then you just end up having this wonderful conversation and getting to know somebody. And it's
well, her life and her story are so intertwined in the birth of the magazine in a really interesting way. And I know that some of you're out there saying, wait, other people create RV content? Because you've been trapped in the world of RVFTA for the last 3 years, and you might not realize there are other things out there. But Stephanie and I do like to recommend other things that we love, and this is a terrific print magazine, and we sure ain't trying to produce one of those anytime soon.
No, and Rova will be on our coffee table for as long as they are producing these issues. We will be buying it personally ourselves. And so if you haven't checked them out, definitely do that. They're worth it. They're a great read. In fact, you just had a great experience the other day where you passed along an issue to your cousin
who stopped by.
And you said, here, Kevin, take this. I think you'll really like it. Take a read. And he was texting you. Like, this is so good.
It's so true. Like, my cousin is, my cousin's my age. He's in his early 40s. And but he's interested in getting a small RV or a van. He's interested in either the van life or the small towable. And he does have an SUV, and he's a bachelor.
Mm-hmm.
And he has
two dogs.
He has a business that's spring, summer, fall. And I keep telling him, why are you spending the winter in Pennsylvania? You have no obligations.
Want him to snowbird for us.
Go get a van or an RV and go down to Florida, for God's sake. I mean, do it for me. So I handed him, I had an extra copy of Rova issue 2, and we have an article in Rova issue 2, and I wanted him to read it, frankly. And I said, here, take this home. And I got a text back from him like, this magazine's awesome.
Yeah.
I read this magazine from cover to cover. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
So it captured his wanderlust as well. But it's got a lot to offer everyone, and we're really excited to introduce all of you to Gemma Peckham. So stay tuned and get ready to say hello to Rova Magazine. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are really excited to be here with Gemma Peckham, the editor of Rova, the new magazine for epic road trips, and we're going to dive into a great interview with her in a second. But first, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Jayco.
The Ultralight Hummingbird is the newest addition to the Jayco lineup of travel trailers, weighing in at about 3,000 pounds and packed with features and modern conveniences. It's the definition of towable fun. Get up and go and leave your worries behind with the Hummingbird, which comes with the industry's best 2-year limited warranty. Visit your local Jayco dealer or jayco.com for more information. Jayco, generations of family fun.
Welcome to the show, Gemma. We are really excited to have you here, and we are fans of Rova. We are readers.
Hi, Gemma.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I'm a fan of yours as well, so this is a nice moment for both of us.
Well, thank you, because we really are just so thrilled to share your product with our audience. We think it's the perfect complement to what we do nerds.
I'm such a nerdy fan that I refuse to subscribe because it's so exciting seeing it on the newsstand.
Oh, that is the best compliment.
So I wait, and then I look, and no, it's not there yet. And then when it's there, I buy a copy or two.
Well, thank you so, so much for that.
Yeah, it does look very pretty on the newsstand. There's not a prettier magazine out there. So, Gemma, we were totally blown away by just the debut of this magazine. We thought it was just perfectly timed and poised for a new generation of RVer, which we are really thrilled to look forward to. But we have actually no idea where this magazine came from. So we want to hear that story from you.
And by the way, who are you?
Who are you? Let's start coming into the RV scene.
So tell us who you are. What's your background before Rova?
Sure. So as you can probably tell, I'm not from the States. I grew up in Australia, in one of the capital cities of a state in Australia in the south. And I, straight out of university or college, as you guys would say here, I studied publishing and editing, and I went into a publishing job in my home city of Melbourne. And that was, I mean, publishing and the written word and magazines in particular have always been a passion of mine. I really enjoy printed products. I think being able to read something and hold it and see the images rather than just have it on a screen is really fantastic. And that's why I really wanted to get into it. And also, speaking of nerds, I'm a real nerd when it comes to grammar and writing and things like that. So that's the background when it comes to publishing. So straight out of uni, I went and worked at a publishing house where we published many, many different magazines of a real variety of subject matter as well. So we did things like local government publications, and we did things like building management and all this stuff that was fantastically boring, I have to say. But one of the things that I worked on was a magazine called Caravanning Australia, which is, in Australia, caravanning is pretty much the same thing as RVing over here. So people will, usually they just hitch up their caravans. Australia is similar in size to the United States, so people really get out there and they hit the road for extended periods of time. So I worked on this magazine that was really focused on that lifestyle. And we did a lot of, you know, kind of in-depth reporting, and we spoke to a lot of people who were out there on the road. And it was really fascinating for me, actually, because growing up in Australia, my parents were really into the whole caravanning thing. So much like your kids, I think, my parents' children, myself and my two sisters, went everywhere in Australia. We traveled across the middle of the country through the desert. We went to a whole bunch of outback places. We went up the west coast of Australia and back down through the middle. And this kind of started when I was, I guess, 5 years old or so. And it went until I was too old to think that it was cool to go traveling with my parents, I think. So so we traveled so much. We were taken out of school a lot when we were kids, just to drive around the country. And, you know, they're some of my favorite memories, you know, of my childhood, is being out there in the Australian outback, you know, climbing Uluru or Aswath, as you guys might know it, seeing the tropical kind of rainforest of the north and the coastal areas of the western coast of Australia. And I have incredible memories, which luckily are supported by incredible photos as well from those times. So, you know, it's funny. I heard your message about Jayco earlier, and we went on a 4-month trip with my parents when I was 9 in a Jayco Songbird, which is it's kind of an old school caravan with 3 single bunks at the back and a double bed up the front, and, you know, the stove and the dining table that you can drop down into another bed. And we lived in that, my two sisters and myself and my parents, for a few months. So that's a bit of a background of at least my interest in RVing. I'm not just kind of a magazine publisher.
Girl's got street cred, man.
Yeah. I have to say, Gemma, you're kind of... I'm having an unexpected moment here, because you speaking right now, I'm like fast forwarding 20 years and in my head thinking, what are my boys going to say? You know, right? What are they going to be doing? How is what we're doing with them going to impact their life choices and their work? Because, you know, Jeremy and I didn't grow up doing what you're talking about. This is new for us. And, you know, you referenced our boys and their experiences and yours. And I'm thinking, are they going to do something wildly creative with all this weird
if
stuff?
If they ended up editing a magazine about RVing, I would be the proudest father.
You're never right. Maybe when it's time for me to pass the torch for Rover, one of your boys will be ready to step up. You never know.
Oh, I hope they're grammar geeks too.
I hope so too.
Now, I see where this story is going, so let's just keep moving. So tell us about the origin story of Rover, about Executive Global Media. How was this magazine born, and how did you end up becoming the editor?
Sure. So, like I said, we had Caravanning Australia in Australia, which I edited for about 4 years. And then we decided, myself and my husband decided that we were going to move to New York and see what we could do over here in terms of, because he's a writer, so we wanted to do publishing and writing type things. Actually, he writes, his name's Kane Gross, he writes the introspections in the magazine, but we can talk about that later. Anyway, I spoke to my work in Australia about it, and they suggested that we try to start something here in conjunction with the office back in Australia. So the office in Australia is Executive Media. We over here are Executive Media Global. And we knew that we needed a magazine to launch this new publishing company with. And having the expertise in caravanning and that history of road travel and things, that was the area that I was really interested in. The magazine that we do in Australia is really geared towards, you know, the retired generation, the older people, which I'm sure, you know, you're very familiar with a lot of people still associating RVing with the older market. However, I did a bit of research, you know, I looked at the RVIA statistics and things, and, you know, everything was pointing towards this particular industry becoming a lot younger. And for me, that was like, hooray, like I can actually work on this. And I'm a millennial. I'm just at the very end of the millennial age bracket. But I thought this is something that I can bring my knowledge to, and that I can speak to my peers rather than speaking to people who are in a different generation to me. And I can do what I love, which is bringing stories to people. And I think, you know, RVing, living a life on the road, traveling the country, the stories that come out of that are just so incredible. And that's really where it came from. And you know, the response to that first edition was much more than I expected, to be honest. You know, coming over here as an Australian without a lot of experience in the US publishing market, without a lot of experience, I suppose, in the RV market here, although I have driven across the States in an RV from Vancouver to New York. Just having all of that come together really, you know, it was a really, I guess it was a moment that told me that I was doing the right thing.
In a weird sense, working on that Australian magazine may have prepared you better for this magazine, for Rover, than if you had been working in the American RV industry, because this has sort of all exploded at once, and it almost feels a bit more like European or Australian
camper vanning culture.
Than it does something that's related to the picture that most of us have of senior citizens, you know, retiring and going and buying a motorhome.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a really great compliment for me, I think. Really, it started out, we were looking at, it was RVing as the major focus, because that was, you know, what we were kind of, I guess, the industry that we thought might receive it best. But as it's grown, we're up to the third edition now. As it's grown, we notice so many of these people, it's van lifing, and it's the smaller trailers, you know, the adventure trailers. There's this whole Airstream thing. There's the Instagram that's integrated with it. And there's so much more to it than just that RV life that, that we all kind of, well, not we, cause you know, we knew that it wasn't that retired lifestyle, but, it's just, yeah, I mean, it's great to hear that you get a bit more of that adventure from it, because that's what we're trying to do with it, is show that these road trips can be very adventurous rather than just, you know, something that you do once you've finished your working life, I suppose.
Now, in terms of the editorial direction and what you're looking for in a piece and how the pieces read, what are you trying to get out of your writers?
What it is for us, and this comes from, I don't want to name any names, but this comes from reading a lot of other publications that deal with similar subject matter, which is, you know, RVs, road trips, I guess automotive kind of travel and that kind of thing. A lot of it is very gear focused and it's very review focused, and that's all great. You know, that there's definitely a place for that, and it's really useful. But for us, we wanted to be something very different, which is telling the story of travel. So what we do is, when we're approaching writers, we like to talk to people who are either living on the road full time, or that's a huge part of their lifestyle. And then rather than actually commission a story and say, we want you to write about this, what we generally try to do is say, tell me a story about your travels, whether it's somewhere that you've been recently or if it's something that, you know, that happened to you that you remember incredibly vividly, or if it's a moment that changed your life. And I think you guys will know, because you've spoken to so many people, there are so many reasons for people getting out there on the road, and there are so many incredible, I guess, revelations, and there are people having really philosophical moments, but there's also, you know, it's just fun, and there's people meeting other people. And I just find the stories of life on the road so incredibly interesting. So I suppose you could kind of call it, it's halfway between like a niche sort of enthusiast magazine and then something more along the lines of like a literary kind of style publication. If that makes sense.
You know, Gemma, as you were just explaining the editorial view, it's so funny. I thought of the emails that we get, and the most touching, sort of moving part of what we do is that we're lucky enough to receive these emails, not every day, but quite often, where mm-hmm. people do exactly what you're saying. And they explain their motivation, right, for doing mm-hmm. this RV thing and like breaking out of whatever trap they felt that they were in and going and doing this thing that nobody around them understood and getting an RV and going to the campground with their kids. And it's so funny because no matter how overwhelmed we end up feeling like with our work, or how, you know, oh, I've got this deadline and we're producing. And those emails are the most touching part of what we do. And basically you're saying you're creating a magazine that's telling those stories, you know, that are the, that are just really heartwarming and inspiring.
I think so. And I think another great part of it is like some of the stories are a little bit more, I guess, factual or instructive. We have articles from people talking about how they stay connected on the road or how they make friends and, you know, things that are very useful to that kind of lifestyle. But I also think we do try to be very aspirational. So we show people, you know, what you can get out of that life. Because I think there are a lot of people out there that don't realize, you know, how much you can actually gain personally from a life like that on the road.
All right, two questions at once. Why do you call it Rova? And okay. Why do you have adventures instead of issues?
Well, Rova is a fairly easy one. Rova is short for road vacation. So we've just chopped those words up and put them together. Also, we thought it was a nice, it's got RV in it as well. So you've got, and also the third point is that traveling around is often called roving. So when you add those three things together, it was sort of a no-brainer. When we were brainstorming ideas, it all came together. So road vacation is really what...
And it's nice in a sense because you're obviously doing a lot more than covering the traditional RV. I mean,
yes.
Some of the camper van or the hashtag van life, those are not even technically RVs sometimes, according to the RVIA.
Exactly. And I think according to a lot of people that we speak with as well, whether it's we're speaking to people about advertising or sometimes just, you know, we meet people at shows and they say, well, you're not really talking about RVing. And to me, RV stands for obviously recreational vehicle. And we're all about people taking their vehicles and going and getting some recreation. You know, so that's how I see it. And really, it has transformed a little from a real RV focus into something that's more about the vehicles, whatever vehicle it is, and where it takes you on the roads of America. So it's interesting because it's obviously evolving, being that it's very new. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes. But we're definitely keeping that, you know, the road trip sort of ethos behind it.
Then
your other question.
Oh, no, go ahead, please. Go ahead.
Your other question was just about having adventures as opposed to editions or issues. Really, it's just for us, you know, editions and issues are fine and they, you know, they serve the purpose. It is what they are. But we think that every magazine of ours that you read, at least we hope that it is an adventure and it takes you to places with other people, or maybe it takes you to places within yourself where you can think, you know, think about what it is that you might like to do with regard to this kind of lifestyle, or even some of the articles might just help you to think a little bit more about your life or, you know, the way that you approach the world. I mean, that's getting very philosophical, but...
Well, you're allowed to do that on this podcast.
Oh, great, great.
we do it too often.
No such thing. So that's where adventure came from. It's just something different. You know, if you pick up any other magazine on the newsstand, I doubt that any of the others will be called adventures as opposed to issues or editions. And we like to do things differently, which hopefully comes across.
All right. How do you picture your ideal reader when you think in your mind of somebody picking up that issue, and who are they?
It's a really good question because I think that's changed a little bit as well since we started. When we started out, it was very – the demographic was really millennials and Gen Xers. So you're looking at kind of, you know, I guess 18 to 40-ish year olds, maybe a little older than 40. But the very and then I guess the types of people in terms of personality we were looking at were people who like to live a little differently, think outside the box, you know, adventurers, people who don't necessarily subscribe to the typical, you know, American dream of, you know, marriage, kids, white picket fence, stay in the same place for this amount of time. But it definitely was the younger people who were thinking that way about their lives. But since we've been receiving a lot of emails and things from our readers, we're getting them from every walk of life. We're getting them from people who are like 70-year-old men who say, I'm not a millennial, but I feel like one, and your stories really speak to me, and it really reminds me of the time that I did this and the time that I did that. So while it is it skews younger because of the content and the way that it's presented with its design and with our Instagram, and it's just, I guess it's naturally aimed at a younger audience. But the great thing that we found is that it does appeal to people across the board, as long as they're up for adventure and that they love a good road trip.
That's so insightful, because I think there is a real link between a lot of the people in their 20s or the so-called millennials who are into van life and somebody who's 60 years old and is buying a $100,000 Class B from Winnebago or Road Track. I mean, there is a link, because that person wants to be active and they want to be adventurous and they want to be seeing the country in a similar way that a 25-year-old wants to see the country.
They don't want retirement to look like retirement, right?
Exactly. That's totally right. And I just love it. My dad now is 73 and my mum's 6 years younger than him, so that would make her 67. And they have an off-road camper that, you know, they hook up to their four-wheel drive and they still head out into the wilds of Australia and find somewhere where there's no one else around, set up the camper, get out the camp stove. Obviously there's a bottle of wine or two involved when they set up, but you know, and that's what they do. And that's, I guess, seeing that my parents are still living that life as well helps me to remain connected to those people who might not be as young as what the typical demographic that we started out with was.
Now, we would be remiss to not talk about the physical look and feel of Rova. So just quickly tell us, what does this magazine look like and feel like when you're holding it in your hands?
Okay, sure. So the aim of – we wanted to create something that had a good amount of weight to it, so that it felt like you were holding something that holds a lot of great content in it. We've gone for it's sort of a matte satin finish on the cover, which means that it's not that glossy cover that you get on most magazines. It's a little bit more I think when you think of it in a tactile way, it's very smooth. It's very I don't know. It just kind of feels – comfortable to hold, if that makes sense.
And you can put it on your bookshelf when you're done, as opposed to throwing it in the garbage.
That was one of the things that I mentioned when we were talking to our printers about stock, and also to the publishing company in general, is that we want it to be more of a piece that you keep and collect, and you'd be happy to have it out on your coffee table of your RV or even at home, because it's an object, you know, that is too nice to get rid of, and that it's got stories in it that you know, you don't want to throw out. The paper we've used on the inside, the stock, is a little bit thicker than what you might find in other magazines, just because I think we've got some great imagery in there, and the thicker paper really complements that. And it really is the experience of sitting down with a good quality product and feeling like you've got an hour and you can sit down with this quality in your hands and just really enjoy the experience of reading the magazine.
Well, Jeremy is your target audience, because as a man who collected boxes and boxes of The New Yorker, now he has a new magazine to collect over the years.
Well, that's brilliant, because Jeremy, I'll tell you, I have a box here sitting right next to me of old New Yorkers.
all right, now we relate. Yeah.
We won't even go down that funny road.
We're going to just talk more after the podcast about that.
Yeah.
He wants to know which ones you have. All right.
Well, yeah.
All right. We are going to be back in a second after a quick break, and we're going to talk more with Gemma about the specific adventure editions and what you're going to find in them. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are really excited to be back for a second segment with Gemma Peckham, the editor of Rova, the new magazine for epic road trips. But first, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Thetford.
Thetford is the industry expert and innovation leader, and they have been making RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. If your RV needs a good wash and wax after a busy camping season, check out the Thetford Premium RV Wash and Wax. It's really important to use products that are specifically developed for RV exterior, so you can protect the paint and decals on your rig. The Thetford Premium Wash and Wax will get your rig looking shiny and clean without doing any damage. See a complete lineup of products. Visit Thetford.com.
Welcome back to the show, Gemma. Are you still there?
I am. Thank you.
Oh, all good. Right.
Thank God, because we have no other plan for the rest of this episode. So we're going to dive in. Let's talk specifically about each adventure. So sure. In Adventure 1, I just want to give everybody a feel for the types of pieces that would appear in an issue of Rova. So let's talk about the article about Monk Magazine. That was sort of a quirky, offbeat piece, but I think it kind of defines the tone you're setting.
I think so. So Monk Magazine was something that I hadn't actually heard of before we started Rova. One of our circulation consultant told me about Monk Magazine. And what it was is this magazine that ran for about, I think it was around 12 years between the late 80s and through the 90s. And it was these two guys who lived in an RV, and I can't remember what kind of an RV it was, but it was an old...
It's like a Fleetwood or a Bounder or something like that. I remember the photo of it.
It was a Fleetwood Bounder, correct, yeah. So their RV was called the Monkmobile, and what they did was they just started traveling around the country, and they were really creative people. They were filmmakers and writers, and they were really, really kooky guys. So if you guys are interested in that kind of stuff, I recommend looking them up. But they just decided to go on this trip, and they would write letters home to their family and friends. And eventually they started getting letters back if they hadn't written home for a while that said, you know, what's happening? Where's the letter? We need to read more about your travels, and, you know, we miss reading about what you're doing. And they kind of thought, there seems to be a lot of demand for this, and they decided to make a magazine that they would send home. And I guess, cutting a long story short, they ended up, at one point, I think they had circulation of around 80,000 copies across the states. And they just did these incredible adventures where they would go, they'd either go to a city and they would cover, you know, all the quirky things that happened in the city, and they would talk to some really incredible personalities. Like, they spoke with, they did one of the last interviews with Kurt Cobain, and they spoke with Gus Van Sant, and they spoke with, you know, but then they would interview some really controversial characters as well, like the head of the KKK at the time. They interviewed him just to get his perspective on things, which is very odd. But they did this for 12 years, and they produced it out of the back of an RV. They had an old, if you can imagine what kind of computer they must have had in the late 80s and early 90s, and they would do all of the layouts and things and write the stories and produce it out of the back of their Fleetwood Bounder. So I was so intrigued by these guys, and I decided that I would get in touch and interview them and ask them about their travels and ask them about, you know, what they're doing now and their experiences that they had and what they, I guess, what they got out of it and what they, you know, what the memories that they had of it. And it turned out to be a really great interview because they're still just as quirky as they were before. So it was very, very fun.
Now, Gemma, you touch on a point there that I kind of want to flesh out a little bit, is you still do have your hand in a little bit of writing, right, in this magazine?
Yes, I do. So I guess typically I'm not sure that editors do a whole bunch of writing, but we're a very small team. And so I enjoy writing as well. So I do, I write a couple of pieces in each edition, just based on my interests or places that I've been or, you know, whatever I think is going to suit that particular edition of the magazine.
Well, David Remnick writes for The New Yorker, so you're in good company. Now, this is like van life before social media, this piece. So it was kind of like an interesting piece of history, and it's kind of amazing they had 80,000 circulation before they had the social media tools to promote it.
It's absolutely incredible. And I was going to say, don't quote me on that number, but I think it's too late. But I think it's a number that's staggering to the time that they were producing this publication. And you're right, no social media, no real online communication at all. So this was word of mouth. They would just drive it around and drop it into not just coffee shops and bookstores, but crazy kind of counterculture places like I don't know how much I should mention on a family show, but, you know.
Yeah, kids are listening to this.
Yeah, so very interesting, let's just say interesting places that they would drop it, which were frequented by people who were interested in counterculture and I guess, the quirky parts of the place.
Our imaginations are running wild
right
now.
Perfect word. Interesting. Yeah. We like that. All right, let's talk about Adventure 2, the second issue of the magazine. So, you know, the learning from our camper van was a really... was a piece that just seemed to be at the core of what Rova is all about. Tell us more about that piece.
Definitely. But I would like to say beforehand that we do need to talk a little about your piece in Adventure 2 as well, but we'll get to that in a minute.
You don't need to stroke our ego.
That's the entire reason we invited you on. So.
I couldn't come on without mentioning that. So Learning from Our Camper Van is a piece by a girl called Laura Hughes. And we actually, so she has recently set out on an indefinite road trip with her boyfriend, Shane. They bought a Ford Transit van 2.5 years ago or so, and they've spent that amount of time building it out themselves. So they did absolutely everything that needed to be done to the van. So from flooring to insulation, they did the kitchen. They have, if you can see inside the magazine, there's some images of they've clad the inside of the van in like wood paneling. They have incredible, soft furnishings and things, and it was really about what that process taught them about themselves, how much stuff they needed, how they thought they might be able to live this life eventually. And then within the last, I think, I'm not sure exactly how long ago it was that they left, but within the last 6 months, they set off on this trip. And now they're living full time on the road in their Ford Transit van and loving it, which is what we like to hear.
Now you also cover families and full time families on the road. So in Adventure 3, this was actually my favorite piece in Adventure 3, Our Teacher of the Road. And after I read that about 2 weeks ago or whatever, I actually messaged the author and said that was the best piece I've ever read on a full-time family, full-time travel. So tell us a little bit about that piece.
Yeah, okay. So Michelle Neal is the author of that piece, and she travels with her children, and they live in I can't remember what kind of an RV it is, but really what she and I discussed this piece before she wrote it, and I said, what are the kinds of things that you think about your travels that you might like to write about? And she said, really, one of the things that I notice most is what I'm learning while I'm traveling. And what you think when most people say that they're learning from travels is, how to, empty the tanks or how to make sure that you've got food for the night or find a good camp spot. But She talks a bit about that, but also what she learns from being on the road with her children. And what I found really interesting, I don't have children myself, and I loved hearing this, I guess because of my history RVing with my parents, is that her kids taught her so much about how to enjoy the trips that they're doing. Sometimes the parents will go and say, let's look at the Grand Canyon. It's so incredible and so amazing, which it is. But a kid might say, hey, Mom, look at this rock or look at this flower that I found. And she talks a lot about how traveling with kids really opens her eyes to a whole different kind of experience of travel, which I just loved. I loved that about the story that she told.
I really liked how I think when a lot of families embark on full-time travel, they're very much concerned about the kids and how is this going to work out for the kids. But she wrote very honestly about how it's worked out for her and her husband, but both good and bad. And I thought it was very honest and refreshing to hear about that.
And that's just something that we like to focus on this show a lot, too, is that, hey, sometimes this whole parenting gig for the Gen Xers and the millennials can be, like, all about the kids.
Yes.
But maybe that's not so great in the long run, and it's nice to have those voices,
We can be philosophical about ourselves, too.
Yes.
Definitely, yeah. And I think that she really the piece is written with so much honesty about, like you say, what it is to travel with kids and how you stay connected with your significant other and just how it affects your own personal life as well as the life of the family.
So broadly speaking, what's the response been to the magazine so far? What surprised you about the response to the magazine?
I think because I went into this quite just not knowing how it was going to be received because it's a little bit different. But as soon as the first edition came out, just the feedback that we started getting from people who had picked it up and said, I found this on the magazine and I was, you know, I was hooked straight away. Sorry, I found it on the racks and I was hooked, and we've been waiting for something like this for so long, and this speaks to me in a way that other magazines don't necessarily speak to me. And I think the most surprising thing for me has been just this feedback that we're getting, that we seem to be filling a gap in whether it's people's reading habits or whether it's just the magazine market or whatever it is, but people seem to have found something that they can really connect with, which is awesome because that's exactly what we want to do with it.
I'm hearing somebody somewhere along the way saying to you that millennials don't buy magazines, which I'm not saying I believe, but I'm just imagining that may have been something you had to grapple with in terms of pitching this and bringing it into creation.
Definitely. I did another, I did an interview when we first started actually with someone from the magazine industry, and they said, are you crazy? You're making a print magazine for millennials who RV. He was like, this is probably the most incongruous kind of set of things.
They don't have addresses, Gemma.
It's like millennials don't read magazines. Millennials don't RV. You know, magazines can't be sent to an RV. What are you doing? This is such a crazy idea. And I had actually, I mean, I knew that it was something different, but I didn't really think about it in those terms. And then I thought, oh my God, what am I doing?
It's best not to ask that question.
But the thing is, okay, so millennials, and, you know, I say the word millennials so much because it's an easy word to use with regard to this particular demographic, but I think it has, sometimes it has connotations that I don't necessarily mean, because millennials are talked about so much. But that demographic, that age group of people, they're looking for things that are authentic. So if you think about the resurgence of vinyl, and, you know, the fact that a lot of millennials prefer to read paper books than read on Kindle. They're searching for authenticity, and I think that connects the magazine with the lifestyle, with the people. So getting out on the road in an RV and living a wild and free lifestyle is an authentic way to live, and reading a magazine on paper is also, it has that authenticity that you don't necessarily get from a screen. And so I think that really links it all together, and it means that in some bizarre way it's found the readers that we were looking for, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and I think that readers are still looking for that. I'm one of those people at an age where I straddle, right, this sort of, you know, authentic sort of, you know, print media. You know, you called it authentic, and it does feel that way to me. The print media versus the digital media, where I feel compelled to use my Kindle, etc., because it seems to make more sense. Well, at the same time, I constantly realize that there are times in my life just 10 years ago where I would have picked up a magazine and had a really great relaxing experience. And now instead, if I don't have that print magazine nearby, I end up on my device having a non-relaxing experience.
Facebook.
So I really, really in that reflection, I cherish my print magazines that I still do get on a weekly or monthly basis.
You can get lost in a good print magazine. You can get lost in an issue of Rova where your phone doesn't let you get lost that way.
That's true. And I mean, thank you for saying that. I think it's really beautiful that people still feel that way.
Or I do. I don't know if I'm a kook, but apparently it seems that there are enough kooks like me out there that are responding well to your magazine.
There are power to the kooks, I say. But another thing about print publications is I think what we try to do is curate content that you don't necessarily find online. And we don't put a lot of our articles online. We might put one or two up. But we really like for people to have the experience of reading them on paper. So, I think sometimes you can get lost in that really disposable kind of clickbait, you know, listicles and things like that. And you're not really getting depth to what it is that you're reading. So that's what we try to bring a little bit of as well.
So where can we buy it? How do we subscribe? Give our listeners some just basic information.
Great. Okay. So if you wanted to buy it at the newsstand, which Jeremy, you say you love doing, you can go to Barnes & Noble, Kroger Supermarkets, Ralph's, Chapters and Indigo in Canada, and then a lot of sort of independent bookstores and newsstands as well. So you can find it pretty much all across the country. If you prefer to subscribe, you can do that at our website, which is just rovamag, rovamag.com, and follow the links to subscribe. You can also buy back issues of the magazine on our website as well. So you've got a few ways to get the content. And you can also, sorry, last one is you can subscribe to the digital edition so that you can just read it on your tablet or on your computer if that's the way that you prefer to take in.
If you're one of those people.
You're not completely analog. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I just said if you're not a kook, if you're not one of those people that loves.
No, you're not completely analog. Where can we find you in the digital world and social media?
Yeah, so, well, the website, you can subscribe through there to our digital editions. Sorry. Then we're on Instagram at Rover Magazine. And we're also on Twitter and Facebook, and it's just Rover Magazine as well. So we're pretty easy to find.
All right. Well, thank you so much. That was really a wonderful conversation. I'm an English teacher in my other life. I love talking about print publications, and we don't get to do that too often on our podcast. And really excited that you've entered into this great adventure.
Hey, Gemma, thank you so much for just being just someone who is young and inspiring people to have adventures and to write really great stories about them. That's something that is just fabulous about what you're putting out there into the world.
Well, thank you so much. It really means a lot to me. And I know sometimes people say that, but it really does mean a lot to me to hear from people like you who live this life and all of the readers who get in touch as well, just to hear the passion and the love that people have for this. So, and I really appreciate you guys having me on your show because, as I said, I'm a big fan. So I've, it's been an absolute pleasure.
All right. You keep publishing this magazine. We'll keep buying it. We promise.
And now we're going to go offline and talk about that box of New Yorkers.
Okay, all right. We'll talk soon, Gemma. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Welcome back to the show, everybody, and a big thank you to Gemma Peckham from Rover Magazine. Stephanie, I really enjoy talking to her and hope to have her back on the show at
some point. Absolutely. We're going to have to figure out some way to have her back because she was a great conversation.
And she's part of this outlaw group of, like, people in the RV industry that are from, like, New York, New Jersey. like these kind of radical outlaws like Janine Pettit.
I know.
Jeremy Puglisi, Stephanie Puglisi.
Rachel Hirsch has
Rachel
been on
from
our
Camp
show.
Casual.
Yeah,
I mean, we're creating a...
We're having fun out here on the East Coast, even if the rest of those RV people are in the West.
It's like
Midwest.
An alternate Elkhart right here in Jersey.
All right. So now let's talk a little bit just about what's been going on in the RVFTA world. This past week, we actually went to the Cabela's grand opening out in Albuquerque, New Mexico. We had such a good time. Thank you to all of the RVFTA folks that stopped by and said hi. I'm telling you, those New Mexico listeners, I think they're a little bit quiet because we didn't know there were so
many. let's be honest. You get flown to New Mexico for a grand opening, and we were doing other things with the grand opening, but part of it was to meet our podcast listeners. We didn't know if anybody would show up. People had mentioned they might, and we had a great crowd of people show up. And I'm just going to say, Stephanie was like ready to cry at one point. I mean, we met some really wonderful people with some wonderful stories and people that have been listening to our podcast since episode one.
And we met so many great people that I always feel guilty if I single out anybody.
Well, so it's not. But okay. You know who you are. But everybody that came was really...
Somebody that may have driven 3.5 hours to meet us. That was pretty cool.
But then there were also people that lived like 5 minutes away.
And they're just as important.
Yeah, we don't know if they want their names mentioned. But we had a lovely time talking to you. And dear God, the people of Albuquerque are friendly. Stephanie pointed out, like, you know, there are parts of the country where there's, like, fake friendly.
Right.
That's not New Mexico.
No, I don't. There was a different vibe there than we have, you know, we haven't spent time in that part of the country, really. And we've, like, kind of driven through. You know, that's always been like, oh, driving through to California, that area, that Southwest area. And, you know, there's a different vibe. There was this relaxed, friendly vibe. Very open, very hospitable. But let's not go too far because we want to talk about it on our episode.
And so then here's the news. So next week, we're going to do a Campground of the Week episode about the Albuquerque KOA that we stayed at. We actually decided instead of a hotel, which we were, you know, everybody else that was going to the grand opening stayed in a hotel. Jeremy and Stephanie asked to stay at a campground.
We got special permission.
Because we wanted to get a Campground of the Week review out of it. Actually, she's not kidding. We had to get special permission.
Well, they were probably like,
cynical roll in their eyes. Like, really? But then, you can't stay at the Marriott.
And that's all we were planning on doing. But because we were only there for 3 days, like 3 nights. But we packed a lot in. We did a lot of hiking. We went to a national monument. We went to 4 awesome restaurants. So we decided that we have enough content to do a whole RVFTA episode, a whole Greetings from Albuquerque, New Mexico episode. So next week it'll be paired content all about Albuquerque and the campground we stayed at. I'm really excited to put those two episodes together.
Now, another bit of news from the world of RVFTA is that we happen to be celebrating 100 episodes of Campground of the Week this week. And just recently we celebrated 100 episodes of Girl Camper. So those were some, you know, some landmarks over there in our other two podcasts. And we just wanted to say that we had a special episode of Campground of the Week. We actually went through and we found what our top 10 most popular campground reviews in those 100 were. And
by
we're
download,
talking,
right.
Yep, by download. So what got the most, it's a popularity contest.
Totally.
So we got the 10 most popular episodes and we are talking about them over on Campground of the Week. And then, you know, Janine Pettit on Girl Camper, she brought back her Aunt Sue. Her Aunt Sue had been on an earlier episode and I don't know the number of it, but you know, it was
huge response.
I mean, people went wild over that episode.
Aunt Sue is like unreal.
I edited that episode, the original Aunt Sue episode. I edited it in the car. Do you remember? We were driving. We were on a road trip and I edited in the car. When I edit in the car, everybody has to listen. And, you know, I mean, I could put my headphones on, but then the kids just try to scream over the headphones like, Mom! You know, so it's easier if everybody just listens because it keeps everybody entertained. We all loved listening to
it. I was spellbound. And in fact, like, it's the fact that Janine Pettit has an older aunt who is like this major RV traveler.
Well, she's like almost, an auntie Mae.
It almost
crazy.
Seems like too good to be true. And I joke with Janine that she's like from Central Casting. Like,
right.
She's not real. Yeah. And Janine hires a woman to play Aunt Sue because she's almost too good to be true.
It is kind of like a, you know, like I said, like an auntie Mae kind of situation. So then she brought Aunt Sue back on the show for her 100th episode. And it was fantastic. And people loved it. Aunt Sue's such a character. So check that out. Now, another episode I want you to check out is this week. Girl Camper, episode 103, DIY Your RV. This is one of those episodes I like to bring them up when they're for everybody, right? This is not necessarily a girl camper episode, even though some of the DIYs may be sort of froofy or girly. I don't know. A lot of these...
But a lot of men might want to do it for
their
wives.
Yeah, these DIYs are good for everybody. They're just easy projects you can do in your camper, you know, just spruce it up a little bit, change it up, decorate.
Stephanie, why else do you have DIY on your mind? Why don't we just break this down for people?
I don't know what you're talking about. I really don't know.
I think we just should tell people what we're going to be doing a couple days from now.
Stop. No. Nope.
Come on.
I'm not telling them.
I, at this point, we have to.
I can edit this out.
I think that you have DIY on your mind. I think you've got a project in mind.
I think, but I don't know if it's going to come to fruition.
I think, you know, it's all content here. I think we should tell everybody. We're going to look at a used pop-up camper Friday.
We'll see.
We'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens.
We'll keep you all posted.
You all know. You'll find
and you
out.
Know, you know if we buy it.
You'll know.
You'll see some pictures of it. But Stephanie wants to do like a used pop-up camper kind of DIY and do a makeover.
Yeah, let's be clear. We're not looking at like a dud.
It's pretty old. It's pretty stinking old.
It's cute. It's so cute.
It's like over 20 years old.
Yeah, it's adorable.
So we'll keep you all posted. On that one.
I've been dating this pop-up online.
Our listeners, though, I've been pushing for a second RV for years. And Stephanie's like, if we get a second RV, it is going to be cheap. It is going to be old. And it is going to be something we pay cash for.
Yeah, that's
and,
what I said.
You know, she's right.
And so. I've just been kind of looking around. Like pop-up Tinder, you know? I don't know, do you swipe
throwing,
on Tinder?
She I've has been just throwing swiping. Out lowball offers to people all over Craigslist and ticking off all of these.
No, I'm not on Craigslist. I don't do Craigslist.
Oh, you haven't been doing Craigslist. No. Oh, don't give it away because somebody might go try and find it or something.
Yeah, I'm not on Craigslist.
No, but you've been making lowball offers and even getting some snippy answers back.
I'm very nice about my lowball offers. I say, totally understand if this is impossible, but this is my budget. Because honestly, everybody thinks their camper is worth more
than it
is.
There's some stupid price. You know, there's,
they all
look,
think it's worth
not
so
all,
much.
Not everybody, but some people ask for stupid amounts of money for like 30-year-old pop-up campers. It's like, you want $3,000 for a 30-year-old pop-up camper?
And
come on.
Here's the problem. They think it's worth that much, and there's other people that don't know it's not worth that much. So I really do think that people are getting paid more.
I think it all sorts itself.
But whatever,
it
I mean, whatever they can
out,
get, good for them. But I'm not paying it.
Well, that one you lowballed that was over three grand hasn't sold yet. It's
no,
still sitting there.
It's not going to, I don't think, unless he finally accepts a lower offer. I'd be interested. I should.
Stephanie wants this guy to come back on his knees and say,
no,
please buy it.
No, you know what? I don't want anybody to sell me a camper for any price that they're not happy with. I'm not that kind of person. I'm
really?
Not. Yeah. No. You know what? I always like to walk away,
Stephanie,
from a deal with everybody being happy.
I'm gonna call you on this because the first car we bought together.
That was ages ago.
Okay. But I'm just gonna tell everybody.
All right.
When I was in college and we were dating and very serious, we purchased a new Ford Focus. I purchased it, but you came with me. And I had cash.
I think it was both of our money. Like, I think that we were sharing. It was
probably,
our first car that
probably,
we were sharing.
You probably helped out financially.
Yeah.
Sure. But I remember I had a lot of money. I didn't have enough to buy the whole car. I had like $4,000. A healthy down payment on my first car. She made the salesman cry.
Yeah.
And people are out there like, oh, I don't believe you. She did.
He got choked up. He
had to go get the manager.
I don't feel bad about that situation.
It was over $50.
They were trying to take advantage of us. And I, at that point, I was really upset by that. They were doing this thing where they came in with all these different cars and different prices and different offers. So they
shell
were,
game.
Yeah, it was a shell game. And they were acting like you couldn't compare the offers. Because when I was like, but you're going to do this on this, but not on, like, and when I was comparing them, they were acting like, well, it's impossible to compare. They're different deals. And by that point, I was like, you're treating us like we're stupid. And you know what? That was our, hun, we had no money. That was our hard earned
money. I don't
know if
I've ever had 4,000 cash since then, frankly.
Like, we were hard
I mean, that
workers.
Was the most cash I've ever held in my hand.
I waitressed every night. You know, like, we worked hard for our money. There was nobody giving us a hand up at that point in our lives. And I was like, this guy's trying to take
and
my money.
Point being, you enjoyed bringing him to his knees on the
no,
price.
No, I just want it.
Okay.
I want it a fair deal.
But now we're rambling on. So we promised to keep you all posted.
And I'm not going to make anybody
deal,
cry over a pop-up.
If the deal falls through, we'll tell you. If we buy it and bring it home, you know you'll be hearing about it. So
yeah, all right.
Stay tuned, and we'll see you at the used pop-up dealer's lot.
It's not a dealer lot. It's somebody's house. It's an adjunct professor's house.
He's a professor. He's a university professor selling an old pop-up. I love it.
All right. See you at the campground.
See you at the campground.